It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Use math to make the world a better place. Become an actuary through the Society of Actuaries and find solutions to the world's most pressing challenges. As an actuary, the only thing higher than the pay is the satisfaction.
All right, Matt. So the other day, Ashley and I decided we were going to go have a adult date and left the kid at home. And I decided I was going to spend a couple $100 to get this limousine to take us to and from the restaurant. And then I realized that fee doesn't include a driver. So I can't believe I spent all that money and I've got nothing to show for it.
That's pretty good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Not bad at all.
Good. So before we get into it, I'll say go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. We've got multiple different levels, and we honestly think that all of the levels are a bargain. You get a bunch of content for your money. For our $1 patrons, every week you get a bonus episode. Now, if you want to go up to $5, you get the audio and video version of that weekly bonus episode. Plus, you get the ad-free audio and video versions of our main episode. So, if you love Graveyard Tales, hate that we do ads, we got the ad-free version over there. Now, if you want to go up to the $10, you get all that. Plus, you get our second show, Side Quest, which is a totally different genre for me and Matt. We play games over there. We eat dumb stuff. We've had guests. We try to make the other one laugh or make the other one grossed out or freak them out in some way. I like telling Matt about people who survived these crazy accidents and shouldn't have, and just make him sweat a little bit during the thing. I like doing historical events for Matt. Matt likes to do trivia and make me feel dumb. So it's fun. If you want to see what it's like to hang out with me and Matt, go over there and check out our Side Quest on our $10 a month level. And I promise you, you're going to like something over there. We've got years of back catalog of bonus episodes that you can check out. Sometimes it's tangential to the main episode. Sometimes it's another episode that we didn't have enough to make a full Graveyard Tales episode. So we put it on Patreon as a shorter episode for you guys.
Yeah.
Also, go and check out our sponsors. If we have a sponsor on an episode and you go into our show notes, we've got a link to their website. Plus, if we've got a code for them to get you a discount, that's going to be in there too. And if you help do that, if you check out our sponsors, get something from them, it helps Graveyard Tales out tremendously. And I'll also say, before we get into it, share the show. Tell somebody about Graveyard Tales. Bring them in to the graveyard. Have them start listening. We want to grow Graveyard Tales. That's been our goal since we started, was to share these stories and these experiences with as many people as will listen to us. So if you got a friend who doesn't listen, If you go to school or work with somebody who doesn't listen, tell them about it. If you see your enemy, slap them and then tell them about graveyard tales. Because here, even if you don't like each other, we're family in the graveyard.
That's right. We're like Olive Garden.
Yeah.
When you're here, you're family.
And we're dysfunctional like a family, too. So it the analogy works out perfect. All right, Matt. So on that note, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay. So tonight we are going back to an episode that we got a lot of good response from when we decided to try a little true crime mixed with the haunted stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in looking around at, is there another true crime case that may have some ghost activity associated with it? We came across one of the most famous criminal duos in American history.
Yep.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you're thinking, Bonnie and Clyde, man, what is this? I kind of thought so, too. But believe it or not, people have experienced the ghosts of Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow in multiple locations, or at least what they attribute to be
right.
Bonnie and Clyde. So this was a lot of fun. We think you're going to enjoy hearing about this. If you're young enough, you may not even know who Bonnie and Clyde is. I can't believe you need to get out from under that rock and do some reading if you don't know who Bonnie and Clyde is.
You've heard the name, but you don't know anything about them.
You've heard it in passing. Like, oh, well, look at these two. What do they think? They're some kind of modern day Bonnie and Clyde? And you're like, oh, well, whatever that means, you know.
Yeah.
But we're gonna look at their history, which is, you know, it's incredible of what they were able to pull off. I'm not gonna say accomplish, because they were not good folks at all. But what they were able to pull off up until they met their tragic end, and you know, their spirits may still be hanging around.
Right.
So Adam's going to tell us a little bit about the history of Bonnie and Clyde, and I'm going to surprise you with some ghost stories that, you know, they surprised me. Let's just say that, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, as we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. If we talk about it, it's sourced and referenced down in our show notes. Now, there will be a little bit at the end of my notes. I'm going to give you a heads up. There is a myth about Bonnie and Clyde. We think we know something, and that's not how it happened. We'll get into that. You think you know it, but you know it wrong.
Yeah.
Because I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I know I'm not the only one. Now, when you look up Bonnie and Clyde, the short synopsis that you get is Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow were a young American outlaw couple whose crime spree during the Great Depression turned them into enduring criminal folk figures in U.S. pop culture. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty good synopsis of Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
So, who were Bonnie and Clyde? Well, let's look at Bonnie Parker. Now, Bonnie Elizabeth Parker was born on October 1st, 1910 in Rowena, Runnels County, Texas, the second of three children of Charles and Emma Parker. Her father, a bricklayer, died when she was about 4 years old, and her mother moved the children to Cement City, an industrial working-class suburb in West Dallas, to live with relatives. The family struggled financially, but Bonnie was remembered as bright, sociable, and creative. Now, in Dallas public schools, Bonnie was an honor student who loved writing poetry, reading romance stories, and performing. She was petite. She was under 5 feet tall and under 100 pounds. She was small.
She was little. Yeah.
That's small, S-M-O-L. She was small. Now, she she liked fashionable, colorful clothes and hats, which made her stand out amongst her peer group. And friends later recalled that she dreamed of the stage and enjoyed being the center of attention. So she would dress wildly and wear big, colorful hats and stuff to get the attention. Now, during her second year of high school, she became involved with a classmate, Roy Thornton, and the pair married on September 25th, 1926, just before her 16th birthday. She even had Roy and Bonnie tattooed above her right knee, which was a bold gesture for a young woman at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, tattoos were a, quote, bold gesture when I first got mine. I still remember the stigma around tattoos when I got my first one. And thank goodness that's gone away. But
think about the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had tattoos but sailors.
Sailors and like war veterans.
Yeah. I mean, that was it.
And she wasn't either one of those.
And you know, there was a lot of negativity. Mm-hmm. Surrounding those people. So yep. Tattoos were just kind of lumped in there.
Yep. Very true. Now the marriage, it turned tumultuous and abusive. So Thornton drifted into petty crime and he was eventually sentenced to 5 years in prison in 1929, which effectively ended the relationship, though they never legally divorced. Well, after separating from Thornton, Bonnie moved back in with her mother and worked mainly as a waitress in Dallas cafes, including Marco's Cafe. And if you're around here, you'll know Marco's Cafe. She was known by customers and coworkers as friendly and talkative, and she also kept a brief diary in 1929 where she was expressing loneliness and frustration with her, quote, ordinary life. So she wanted something different. She wanted adventure. Now, one of her regular cafe customers, Ted Hinton, would later become a Dallas County deputy and a member of the posse that killed Bonnie and Clyde. Now, Bonnie met Clyde Barrow in West Dallas in early 1930, most likely at the home of a mutual friend while she was helping care for the friend after an injury. Clyde was already involved in theft and car stealing, and their quick, intense attachment drew her into his world of armed robbery and life on the road. So I mentioned Clyde. Well, let's look at Clyde Chestnut Barrow.
Chestnut.
What? Now, did you know that his middle name was Chestnut before
this
research?
No idea. No idea. I thought that was so funny.
I know. I saw that and I was like, wait, is this a... This can't be right. No, it's Clyde Chestnut Barrow. He was born on March 24th, 1909, near Tellico in Ellis County, Texas. He's born into a large, poor farming family, and he was the fifth of seven children of Henry Basil Barrow and Cummy Talitha Walker. Now, there are names that should not come back into...
Yeah, that's right.
And his mom's name is one of those.
Yeah.
What? And I don't mean Talitha. If you want to bring Talitha back, that's fine. I got no problem with that. But her first name, Anyway, the family's tenant farm eventually failed in drought conditions. And around the early 1920s, they migrated to Dallas. They were joining many other rural poor in the rough slum area of West Dallas, where they initially lived under their wagon before managing to buy a small tent and then a shack. So think about that. They move from Tellico up to West Dallas. They got nowhere to live. So the whole Barrow family is living under their wagon, and then they're able to buy a tent and they live in the tent for a while. And then they're able to afford a shack to live in. Well, as a boy and teenager, Clyde was small and slight, roughly 5'6", about 125 pounds as an adult. So he was small too, but was known as devoted to his family and surprisingly gentle in private life. Well, he attended school only into his mid-teens, and then he dropped out to go to work, which isn't uncommon for that time frame. He had to go make a living. So taking low paid jobs, such as in a Dallas candy factory and other odd work, is what he dropped out of high school to do. But he loved music. He learned guitar and saxophone and reportedly dreamed of becoming a musician. But the cost of instruments and clothing that he wanted far exceeded what he could earn legally. So under the influence of his older brother, Ivan Buck Barrow, Clyde kind of made his way into petty crime as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Started with small thefts, stealing turkeys, and then car theft. And turkey thievery was, you don't think about it, but that was a big deal.
Stealing turkeys.
You'd go steal turkeys from people and then go sell them and make the money. But I never thought, as a turkey farmer, you'd have to worry about people wanting to steal your birds.
Mm-hmm.
Because have you ever walked into a turkey farm? I have.
I've never walked into a turkey farm.
Okay. You walk into a turkey farm, you know somebody's walked into a turkey farm. Because it's from 100 or more of these things.
Yeah.
So I don't know how turkey thievery works. Do you have to, like, club them? Stand outside and reach in and club till they knock out so they're not making all the noise?
You know, even if you've got them in like a pen or a barn or something, you still got to wrangle one. And mm-hmm. They don't want to be wrangled.
No, they don't. They don't want you touching them. And, I mean, they got claws. I don't know if you've ever seen that claw on a turkey foot.
Mm-hmm.
If you're hunting wild turkey and you get a good one, they're called a tree hanger because you can hang them off a tree limb with their claws and it'll hold all the weight of the body and stuff. It's crazy how big those things get.
I guess I got a lot to learn about turkeys.
I'll teach you, Matt. I got a bunch of useless info about turkeys in my head. Now, he was first arrested in late 1926 at age 17 for failing to return a rental car. Then, again, he was arrested soon after with Buck for possessing stolen turkeys. So here we go with turkeys again.
How did they know that they were the stolen turkeys? These are not the turkeys you're looking for.
When you're walking around with turkeys in your pocket because you just stole them, I think people know, Matt.
You can't get a turkey in your pocket.
Oh, you've got so much to learn about. No, I'm just kidding. They fold up real nicely, like origami. Between 1927 and 1929, he drifted between short-term legitimate jobs and more serious burglaries. He did safe cracking and auto theft, and often he just barely escaped getting captured.
Mm.
Now, Clyde met Bonnie, as I said a minute ago, the home of a friend. So soon after their meeting, he was arrested for auto theft. Then he briefly escaped jail with a gun that Bonnie smuggled into him and was recaptured. Then he was sent to Huntsville State Prison before being assigned to Eastham Prison Farm. Now, I mean, if you got you a girl that'll sneak a gun into you into prison, she's a keeper.
She is a keeper. Yeah, you need to put a ring on that.
Anyway, at Eastham, he suffered harsh conditions and repeated abuse. Now, he committed his first known homicide there by killing a fellow inmate who had assaulted him, with another prisoner later taking the blame. So he didn't go down for that homicide, but we know now that it was him mm-hmm. that did it. Now, the brutality of Easton hardened him, and he reportedly vowed never to be taken alive or returned to prison once he got out. Now, Clyde was paroled in 1932 after serving about 20 months. And from then on, he lived almost entirely by robbery. He assembled what became known as the Barrow Gang. And between 1932 and 1934, Clyde, Bonnie, and rotating accomplices committed robberies across Texas and neighboring states, mostly of small shops and gas stations, but also they did get some banks with several killings of law enforcement officers and civilians along the way.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the Robin Hood thing where you rob from the rich because you're poor.
Adam, you know, we talk a lot about our underwear.
Right.
When we talk about tonight's sponsor, MeUndies, but it's not just for guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many options for you ladies out there. And in fact, my girls, I got four daughters and Amanda, and they all love MeUndies. Everything. It doesn't matter. Underwear, bras, sleepwear.
Yep.
It's their favorite of anything. And I told this story last year. I was wearing my neon hearts,
mm-hmm.
and they were sticking out of my shorts. We were at a cookout over Father's Day, and Miranda goes, we've got matching underwear. She had ordered the hearts as well. I didn't even realize it. Because yep. I don't really discuss my our underwear choices with my daughters. But she recognized the pattern. And, you know, your underwear, ladies, shouldn't be the most uncomfortable things that you wear. But for so long, I know they are. I know Amanda's like, cannot wait to get out of this bra when I get home. It's one of the first things she's always wanted to do. That's not the case with MeUndies. When she made the switch, she's like, this is my new favorite. And it's almost like I'm not wearing it. I mean, she absolutely loves it. Plus, right now they've got spring prints that are super cute. And ladies, I promise, Your guys are going to absolutely love you, seeing you in those MeUndies.
That's right. And they have a style for everyone, from classic black basics to fun, expressive seasonal prints. You know, they've got all the different sizes from extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing that there is a flattering cut for everybody. And like Matt said, unmatched comfort. They have the signature softer than soft ultramodal fabric. It's breathable, stretchy, and super comfortable. And they are sustainably sourced materials, and they work with partners that care for their workers. And if you're not happy with your first pair of MeUndies, it's on MeUndies. And they have more than 30 million pairs sold and 90,000 five-star reviews. So women everywhere are upgrading their underwear game and going to MeUndies. So right now, Graveyard Tales listeners can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping. All you got to do is go to MeUndies.com/graveyard and use our promo code Graveyard, GRAVEYARD.
That's 20% off plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/graveyard. And don't forget our promo code Graveyard, GRAVEYARD.
Bonnie and Clyde were brutal in their robberies. They, most of the time, would hit up small shops. But if a cop got in their way, like he said, he was going to die or something before going back to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't care. He would kill the officers, keep on moving. Now, the gang's crimes, fast getaways in stolen cars, and the discovery of staged photographs of Bonnie and Clyde turned them into heavily publicized, quote, public enemies, even though their hauls were often small. So brutal, but they became very popular real quickly.
Yeah, they were so well known.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a time before, you know, internet, social media, all that stuff, word of Bonnie and Clyde's exploits spread very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And understand, you know, the time where they were so active, you know, people were desperate, you know. Yep. There was, you know, they looked for work, you know, most of them couldn't find it. They were barely getting by. Some people weren't getting by at all.
Yep.
And so catching a headline on the local paper of, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, you know, another heist, it doesn't matter how big or how small it was. It was exciting. It was terrifying, you know, especially for people that lived close.
Yep.
But it was entertainment.
Yep.
You know, it was something going on that distracted people from how hard life really was. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, it romanticized what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how, you know, how brutal, you know, how awful, you know, how criminal they became.
Yep.
You know, that was to the average person, this was something that was more fascinating than their regular life.
Right. Right. Like you said, it took their mind off of what they were dealing with.
Yeah.
Now, Clyde organized this very violent breakout from Eastham Prison Farm in January of 1934, and that ended up bringing intense pressure from Texas officials and led to a coordinated manhunt. Texas authorities brought in former Texas Ranger Frank Hammer to track the pair, and he followed their patterns across several states. Now, the last known heist for Bonnie and Clyde is a bit fuzzy, according to historians. But the last one they have any details of was April 16th, 1934. They robbed the First National Bank of Stuart, Iowa. So they weren't staying in Texas. They were traveling across states. And after this, there's always been talk of smaller crimes like car theft and holding up motorists and small businesses, but no other major crime that historians can agree upon. So you get that bank heist as their, usually what people will say is their last crime. Mm-hmm. But I would be willing to bet it was not. Knowing how prolific they were, I would say there was probably, like they said, holding up individuals, maybe small gas stations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now by May 1934, Clyde was regularly visiting the family of a gang member named Henry Methvin in Bienville Parish, Louisiana. And as we know, Texas Ranger Frank, I think I said Hammer a minute ago, it's Hamer.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Ranger Frank Hamer was put on the case of tracking Bonnie and Clyde after Clyde had broken all these people out of prison. And if you're unaware, the Texas Rangers are not an organization to be messed with, even to this day. You know, they were rough and tumble guys back then. And even to this day, the Texas Rangers are some tough humans, and they're well-trained and well-supplied. So they are not the group that you want chasing you. I mean, especially if Walker, Texas Ranger is with
him. Right,
I mean,
you know,
he will kick your butt. Used to love that show. I'm not going to sing the theme song for that for copyright reasons, but go look it up. Good theme song.
That's the only reason he's not singing it, is because of copyright reasons.
100%. I'll sing it to you after we're done here. Bonnie and Clyde drifted in and out of northern Louisiana while staying connected to the Methvin family. And it seems that relatives of Henry Methven had decided to cooperate with the Rangers and struck a deal with them as it pertains to Bonnie and Clyde. So they were doing this to hopefully get leniency for Henry Methven, because he was a criminal too. He was in the gang. So they're like, look, it's turning state's evidence is what it is. It's like, you help us get Bonnie and Clyde. We'll go easy on you. We'll only give you a year or two. You know, we'll turn our backs on these other. Well, there is rumor. It's not solidly documented, but there's rumor that they plan to rob banks in Arcadia or Ruston, Louisiana. But only one clearly documented Louisiana crime is from 1933. It was the kidnapping of H.D. Darby and Sophia Stone during a car theft in Ruston. So, steal their car, they kept them in the car. So, now on the morning of May 23rd, 1934, they stopped in Gibbsland, Louisiana, and they bought sandwiches at Ma Canfield's Cafe. Then they headed down Louisiana Highway 154 toward the Methven farm. Now, in many dramatized versions, their last day includes a full-blown car chase and a shootout. Contemporary accounts and later reconstructions suggest something a lot simpler happened. An ambush.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've seen Bonnie and Clyde movies or anything, you probably, that big old car chase, and they're, you know, behind their cars or in their cars shooting at the cops and all that. No, let's look at how it actually happened. Here's what we know about the shootout. There was a 6-man posse made up of Texas Rangers and Louisiana officers, and they set up on Louisiana Highway 154 near Salis, south of Gibbsland, the day before the killing, and they waited through the night. They used a truck belonging to Henry Methven's father, Ivy Methven, as bait, positioning it partially on or beside the road with a wheel removed, so Clyde would slow or stop to investigate and help. Since he knew the van, he figured it was Methven's dad, and I'm going to stop and help. Now, there's no strong evidence of a preceding high-speed chase that day. The couple were driving normally along a rural road toward what they thought was a friendly stop. So, that whole cinematic last chase is just a storytelling device. Well, Frank Hamer and the other officers were hiding in the brush and behind an embankment off Highway 154. As Clyde rolled down the road in his Ford V8, he saw the truck and recognized it. So he slowed the Ford down, as the officers had expected him to do. As the car slowed, at least one officer stepped where he could be seen or otherwise indicated himself. Now, accounts differ slightly on whether commands were shouted or whether the men just opened fire immediately. But in most officer accounts, they identify themselves and then begin shooting almost instantly, fearing any hesitation would let Clyde escape again. So the posse unleashed a massive barrage on the car. One widely cited figure from later reconstructions is about 167 rounds were fired into the Ford.
Oh, yeah. They unloaded on that car. Mm.
And then reloaded and unloaded again.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Now, Clyde was hit first, likely killed almost instantly. Bonnie is described in some accounts as either screaming or reaching toward him before she was killed in the same volley. So, everything else was just extra.
Yeah.
That was just the icing on top.
We brought all these bullets.
Yeah, we better use them. That way they can replace them for us. Now, the car rolled forward a short distance and came to rest on or near the shoulder or ditch, and it was just riddled with bullets. When the gunfire stopped, the officers approached the vehicle cautiously and then confirmed both were dead. The car interior showed the results of the barrage: shattered glass, torn metal, and the bodies of Bonnie and Clyde slumped inside with weapons, money, and personal effects scattered around. From a nearby gas station or phone, Hamer called Texas prison superintendent Lee Simmons, and he told him that Bonnie and Clyde were dead, and then that effectively ended the manhunt that had been driven partly by the desire to avenge the Eastham prison farm killings and the breakout. So how does this differ from the legend? Well, the last robbery, their last major bank robbery, is clearly documented in Stuart, Iowa, weeks earlier. And there isn't a single dramatic final robbery right before the ambush, the way a lot of movies show. Now, the car chase is different. So on the last day, there's no big car chase. It was a planned ambush on this quiet rural road, and it wasn't an ongoing running gun battle. And it was overwhelmingly one-sided.
Yeah.
Six armed officers firing on a slowing car, not two outlaws trading shots in a prolonged standoff. So just kind of rewrite all that in your head if you know anything about Bonnie and Clyde. And you thought there was this rob a bank, jump in a car, drive away, and have a shootout.
Right, exactly.
Wasn't that way.
History says now that is not what happened.
Right.
Again, but it does speak to the romanticizing of Bonnie and Clyde and their exploits, that their demise would be so dramatic and thrilling, that story endured for a long time. But yeah, it didn't really happen that way. But these two, they met such a violent death on this highway, and they brought about so many other violent deaths that it seemed like they just exuded negative energy, or it followed them everywhere they went.
Yeah.
And so that negative energy just left a trail behind them that leads you to believe that there may be some haunting activity going on.
Right.
Now, locals and visitors alike that come to the ambush site, which is marked, claim to have seen the apparitions of Bonnie and Clyde wandering the roads. Some people even say that they've seen their ghostly images by moonlight. Now, others report that you can hear the sound of gunshots echo through the night, which is just a reminder of all of the bullets that, you know, slammed into that vehicle.
Right.
As the two criminals were ambushed. A lot of visitors, though, report this weird feeling of unease, almost as if they're being watched by an unseen person. But even still, people that have photographed the area say they have captured strange orbs and unexplained figures when they go back and look at the processed photos. Now, There are little markers at the ambush site on Louisiana 154.
Right.
There is one that is dedicated to Bonnie and Clyde. It looks like a tombstone that has been shot up. Okay. And of course it's covered.
Kind of cool.
Yeah. It is a fitting monument to them. And I don't want to say tribute. It seems incredibly morbid to celebrate these two at all. But, you know, they did have some level of fame by this point. So, you know, I wouldn't say it certainly doesn't honor them. It just marks the site of their death. Now, as far as people being honored at this site, they're almost right next to it. Is a small monument that honors those men that were responsible for the ambush. Those six men, the Texas Rangers, and you know the members of the local law enforcement that were responsible for stopping. Because Bonnie and Clyde showed no indication that they were slowing down or intended to stop. There was no way that they were going to meet any other end than being killed by the police. It was either going to happen then or it was going to happen down the line, and they were going to continue on this crime spree.
Clyde said he wasn't going back to prison. Right. So it was bound to happen.
What I think what is so fascinating to me too is that it took the effort of Henry Methvin to basically set them up to reach this point. I mean, you're right. The Texas Rangers, you don't want to fool around with them. I mean, they were the kind of like, you know, they always get their man kind of deal. And I mean, they were always like a step behind. Even it says, you know, Clyde was really close to being caught several times, but they were always just a little bit too late. And they almost, you know, mythically, they would zoop, get away. And I think that's what led to such a bloody ambush, because these guys were like, not on our watch. They are not going to continue to rob and kill as long as we're in, you know, a part of law enforcement. We're not going to allow it. And they were at the last straw. They figured if they didn't do this, he was going to figure out another way to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And I say he, you know, Clyde, you know, Bonnie in a lot of ways, as bad as she was kind of, you know, along for the ride. I mean, she took part in it. But, you know, Clyde was the mastermind here. You know, he was the one that figured all this stuff out and was able to, you know, bring in, you know, these other people that they trusted enough to be a part of that Barrow gang.
Right.
But there are several Bonnie and Clyde sightings as far as, you know, their spirits or ghosts or your apparitions, however you want to say it. Now, the first one involves the what they call the death car. Okay. It's the Ford vehicle that Clyde was driving during the ambush. And you can see what is said to be the vehicle that they were killed in the museum of the Bonnie and Clyde ambush. Okay. So right there on Louisiana 154, there is a museum to this ambush, the Ambush of Bonnie and Clyde Museum.
Yeah.
And they,
which is wild.
I know, it's crazy. It's like somebody making a museum of like Charles Manson memorabilia. It's like, what, mm-hmm. what is this? Although, you know, there are crime museums all over the place.
Yep. What are they called? Dark tourists or something?
Oh, yeah.
Love that.
And this actually is listed on a ton of dark tourism websites.
I bet.
Not just the Ambush Museum, but the actual site itself and other places that they frequented or, you know, had some run-in with law enforcement and managed to escape. But the vehicle is all complete with all the bullet holes and everything else. So, you know, I think they claim it's the one. It may be a replica, but it's there. So this is the vehicle they died in. It was purchased in the late 1940s and became a tourist attraction for years. You know, people would come from all around to see it in the 40s. Dark tourism wasn't even a thing yet, or just it didn't have a name.
Yeah, it was a thing. It just didn't have a name. They just didn't know what to call themselves.
But it was then purchased by the owners of Whiskey Pete's Casino in Prim, Nevada. Now, many people report this feeling of dread when they stand near the car. And there are so many photos taken of the automobile. And some, when they were developed or processed, they have really weird little orbs that show up in the photos. Yeah. Now, another place that the spirits of Bonnie and Clyde are often reported is Old Spring, Texas, which is near Houston. Now, the one time Springfield State Bank was robbed several times by the Barrow Gang.
I just don't know. I've never understood how the same gang, because it's been this way on other gangs, can rob the same bank twice.
I know. Well, I mean, you know, they walk in and buy sandwiches. People have seen their pictures. I mean, they had to know who they were. I guess at that point, you know, you were too scared of them to do anything.
True.
You know, it wouldn't be like nowadays, you know. They post some guy's picture on there. You're liable to, you know, depending on where, especially in Texas, you know, you're liable to have somebody go, citizen's arrest, you know, put you down right there. But not in the 30s. Okay. You know, people didn't do that. But one of those robberies of the Springfield State Bank involved a gunfight. So the bank was eventually closed, and it was renovated into a space for small businesses. Contractors decided that, in the interest of history, they would leave the many bullet holes that were left from that gunfight.
Interesting. Yeah.
But a lot of the businesses had a hard time staying due to the presence of intense poltergeist activity.
Oh, wow.
Motion sensor cameras would be activated with no reason. Weird images would show up in photographs, and some would clearly show a man and a woman in 1930s style clothing. This is in the businesses that were in the same building that used to be the Springfield State Bank.
Yeah.
And some people like to speculate, hey, it's the Barrow Gang coming back for another robbery. this place was so easy to hit when we were alive. Yeah. We're going to continue after death.
We got it twice when we were alive. How much easier going to be when people can't see us?
Right. Now, let's talk about the ambush site, the actual spot. Okay. Visitors and residents claim that if you go to the site of their death, located on Route 154, which is about 7 miles south of the Ambush Museum, the ghosts of Bonnie and Clyde make themselves known. They say that you can spot their ghosts lingering in the woods, and ghostly apparitions will appear in photographs taken of the area.
You have to say Barrow Gang three times as you spin in a circle?
I did not see that. Okay. But it'd be worth a shot, you know.
Yeah, give it a try.
Now, Adam mentioned Frank Hamer, who was the famous Texas Ranger that led the posse that eventually took Bonnie and Clyde down. I mean, he was legendary, and he was known for surviving over 50 gunfights. He was wounded 17 times. Yeah. I mean, when Adam says these Texas Rangers were tough, he ain't kidding. I mean, if I get shot once, I'm done. I'm like, I'm out. Oh, you just got shot in the arm. Just got shot in the arm.
Just. You know how, I had a bullet in me.
Do you know how close my arm is to my chest? You know, I'm done. I'm going home. I'm going to be an accountant like my parents wanted me to be.
Yeah, right.
17 times and 50 gunfights. Frank Hamer was the man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Bad mamma jamma right there.
He became known as the greatest American lawman of the 20th century. No doubt.
I believe
he
it.
He was also a master tracker with a near eidetic memory. Now, the rumor is, now, this is just a rumor. I tried and tried to confirm this, but this is just a rumor.
No, he couldn't fly.
That, that Frank Hamer had said that when he went back to the ambush site, that he could smell blood, gunpowder, cordite, and Bonnie's perfume.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, like I said,
if anybody's going to have that, I would believe it would be one of the guys from the posse.
Yeah, but, you know, to be there, and it makes me wonder, he may have said it in passing. I can't find it documented anywhere. But, you know, they always say that the sense of smell is more tied to your memory than anything else. I can attest to that. I mean,
yeah.
I've told Amanda, I was like, I dated a girl in high school that wore this particular perfume. And to this day, I can smell that perfume and be like, looking around.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda actually went and found this perfume. Okay. and bought it. And I'm like, that's not it. So either it has changed over the, you know, 35 years I've been out of high school, I have it wrong. I don't have the name right because it's not.
Either one of those are possible.
But I mean, it immediately, like, you know, it triggers something in me. So it makes me wonder, is something paranormal going on that immediately that left these odors, you know, that you know, Frank Hamer would pick up on? I couldn't find where anybody else smelled anything. They hear gunshots at the ambush site, you know, but I never saw anything else about people smelling anything.
You know,
or is, if he visits that site, is this so intense, this emotion, that it brings those smells back to life? And that, right, I could actually believe.
I believe that. Or if you've ever been to Louisiana, they do have a lot of foliage there.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a certain plant or flower blooming or whatever nearby that triggers the memory,
mm-hmm,
he could smell that natural thing. And then in his mind, the other smells come back.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, we don't really know, because Hamer was notoriously tight-lipped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially when it came to the ambush, he refused to speak to the press or give interviews. You know,
if a man gets shot 17 times and keeps doing it, he's not going to talk about it.
That's exactly right. Now, on May 23rd, 2013, a paranormal group called Friends of Dusana. Dusana is a Czech word for spirit.
Hmm.
They are out of Shreveport, Louisiana. They set out to capture evidence of the spirits of Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker on the 79th anniversary of their death. Now, they came out with cameras, voice recorders, and a spirit box, and traveled to the ambush site along Highway 154. Now, they were able to capture several EVPs and got some interesting spirit box responses. At one point, team member Pam Moorhead, asked for the name if there is a spirit present with them. She receives the answer, C. Barrow. Huh. Yeah, I mean, you can hear it.
Why would it say C. Barrow?
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know. It's not crystal clear.
Instead of just Clyde.
Yeah. It's not crystal clear. But it's better than this one. It says she asks again and she gets a response, Clyde. Now I listened to these. But the recording that I listened to sounded more like Ralph. I mean, literally it sounded more like it said Ralph. Yeah. And I know, you and I have tried this whole spirit box thing, not with an official one, but, you know, I think sometimes you can amp yourself up so much that you hear something that's not really there. And
audio pareidolia.
Yeah, I mean, you just pick it out. But Pam then inquires if the spirit's energy is around them, and the answer she gets is up the road, which is much more clear. Now, the EVP recordings they got were a little bit more creepy, including a whispered voice saying, "Clyde Barrow, you all right?" And I mean, now it's really clear.
That's
it's
weird.
Clear enough that it made me think it was fake. But I mean, yeah. I went to their website, you know, and I was like listening to these, and I was like, that sounds really good. You know? So
yeah.
I was like, you put Ralph up here and tried to tell me it was Clyde. And then you throw this one out. So I got to think you're being honest with me here. You know, that's what it sounds like.
That's the problem. The problem I have with, spirit box or EVPs or whatever. I have the hardest time hearing what is supposedly being said.
Yeah.
And very rarely get it,
mm-hmm.
you know, on my own. But when I do, like you, I then think, okay, is this fake? Because that's too clear.
Yeah.
It's like Bigfoot photos.
Yeah.
We're never going to be able to prove one because as soon as we get a clear one, people go, no, that's fake. It's too clear.
Yeah.
And then you get a fuzzy one and you're like, no, look how fuzzy
it is. I can't tell anything from this fuzzy picture.
Yeah. So to me, the EVPs and stuff are the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so difficult. And then as soon as somebody says, this is an EVP that says whatever, you're going to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are one of those craziest things to me. You'll find these little videos of some weird chant and then a list of things that it says it's saying. And whichever one you're looking at, you hear it. If you close your eyes, it is saying whatever it's saying is that you hear that every time until you read and then you hear it. You know, it's like, my name's Fred Flintstone or something, you know, it's like, what? And then the next thing is, you know, I love
chicken fingers. Good.
Yeah. You know, and you're like, this is the weirdest thing, you know, it's just whatever. So I think some of that happens when you're told what this EVP says,
right.
You will automatically hear it. And it may not sound like that at all. I love it when I get the opportunity to listen to one and not know what it's supposed to say and see if I can figure it out. And I don't even want to know the context. Let me decide what I think it says and then give me the context, the question or anything else. So I'm not, you know, I'm not biasing myself
right
by wanting to hear it so bad.
Right. Especially if it's a clear one.
Sure.
It's a pretty good one. Then that helps validate that EVP.
Yeah. And trust me, I'm not disparaging this Friends of Dusana group. I mean, you know, they did a great thing going out there and giving this a go. And they collected evidence. You know, I'm always playing devil's advocate when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Right.
You
got to a degree, you know. It like we've always said, you know, believe, and it's good to be skeptical, but you gotta walk that line. You can't go fully on either side too much.
Right.
Because if you do, you're going to be swayed. Yeah.
Now, according to the website, the Texas Hideout website, this one is really kind of weird. Pam had mistaken Clyde's birthday to be May 24th. Which would have been the day after their investigation. But actually, Clyde Barrow's birthday was March 24th. So when Pam commented, Clyde, your birthday, Clyde, tomorrow is your birthday, you can hear the words, no, it isn't, when they play the recording back. It's an EVP. So they didn't hear that response live. They heard it after the fact. And it is quite clear. So you hear Pam's voice on the recording going, Clyde, tomorrow's your birthday. And then you hear, no, it isn't. And you're kind of like, okay, now that one's really weird.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, there is a lot of evidence around the ambush site, around the museum, that car, that would make you think, okay, these violent criminals left enough of a negative stain that their spirits are still lingering around. So I want to finish up with this story, you know, poking around. I found this on Reddit, and there's no way in the world I can verify that this story is true. But with the comments and everything, it sounds very true. It is not, you know, I had the ghost of Bonnie Parker came up and, you know, pinched me on the butt and Clyde scratched me. It's none of that, but just check it out. This is from a post from Reddit poster Ghoster2K. Mom told me that one day while she was at a store in Greenville Avenue in Dallas, she and her mother were in the checkout line and started talking with a young lady. After a few minutes, the young lady seemed to get a bit nervous. She said goodbye to Mom and Granny and left without her groceries. Granny found out later that they had been having a friendly chat with Bonnie Parker. Not the ghost, the real live Bonnie Parker.
That's wild.
Now, he says, several years ago, after doing some research on the infamous Barrow Gang, I decided to go on the road and visit some of the places in their lives. I motored up to Dallas first, where I went to Oak Cliff. There, in a private churchyard called Western Heights Cemetery, lay the remains of Marvin Buck Barrow and his brother Clyde. I took some photos and left. I then drove up to Crown Hill Memorial Park in West Dallas, where after some searching, I found the grave of Bonnie Parker. I also took some photos and left. My last stop in Dallas was Grove Hill Memorial Park, where lies the body of Iva Benny Blanche Caldwell Barrow Frazier. How many names do you got to have?
All of them.
Of the original five members of the Barrow Gang, Bonnie, Clyde, Buck, Blanche, and W.D. Jones, she was the only one who died of natural causes. She gave up her life of crime, married Eddie Frazier, lived to a good old age, and died on Christmas Eve, 1988, at age 77.
Oh, wow.
The section of the cemetery where Blanche is buried is quite large, and I thought I'd be searching for hours to find her. I got out of my car, stepped onto the grass, and said out loud, "Can you give me some help here, Blanche?" I started walking. After walking about 12 paces, something on the ground reflected the sun into my eyes for just a second. I turned to my right, looked, and found myself at the grave of Blanche Barrow. Says, I put a rose on her grave, took some pictures, and left. A week later, I took a trip to Gibbsland, Louisiana, to find the place where Bonnie and Clyde were ambushed. Fortunately, I had no trouble finding the place. I pulled over, parked, and got out to take photos. Walking over to the historical marker, I noticed that it had been shot at many times. The place was in the middle of the proverbial nowhere. Then I noticed something odd. The place was completely silent. There were no sounds made by birds or animals. The place gave me the creeps. Said, I took some photos and got the heck out of there. Said, I had the feeling I was being watched. So,
That's wild.
So pretty interesting, because this, you know, I tend to believe posts like this because it's not super exaggerated or everything. It's just, it's fascinating, but. You know, so many people can tap into the energy that's left behind, even if all it is just something's different about this place. you know, you and I have both experienced this. We've told stories about you go somewhere and you're just like, something is off in this place. The energy is different. And you don't really know, is it paranormal? Is it just a funny vibe you get? Whatever. But I think if you've had that experience before, it may be because you've walked somewhere where the universe held on to some negative energy. It may not be anything as dramatic as the ambush of Bonnie and Clyde, but you know, you never know. You step into a room, you go down a hallway in a building, you ride past a road and you're like, something about this, I don't know, there's nothing, but whenever I'm here, I feel weird. You know, it could very well be you're in one of those spots where the earth held on to that energy for something, you know?
Yep. And I'll tell you this, maybe 2 years ago, me, Ashley, and Michael went to Fort Worth, and not a far drive for us, but you know, we don't make it often because it's busy down there. And you know, I like to stay out of busy downtowns. So, but Ashley surprised me with a ghost tour, Fort Worth ghost tour down there. So we were walking around and we came to this hotel, and it's been so long, the name escapes me, but we went inside and the tour guide was like, a lot of times Bonnie and Clyde's ghost are seen at this hotel. And I was like, really? Cause they didn't like die. She goes, no, but they stayed at this hotel, and in the corner room, several floors up, so that they could see the two directions of the street and see if the cops were coming for them, and that they come back occasionally. And I got to thinking about it, and that was one of the first times that I went, maybe ghosts are transitory in visit. They're not always stuck to one particular place, but they can go between multiple, you know, 3-4 places that they liked in life.
Yeah.
And because, as you talked about, there's several locations where Bonnie and Clyde are supposedly seen. And Texas and Louisiana. But I just thought that was interesting. So if you go downtown Fort Worth and take the ghost tour, you might go into that hotel that Bonnie and Clyde stayed at in the corner.
Yeah, I came across the name of that hotel and I can't recall it. But you know, I think it lends itself to that, the whole stone tape theory, that you know, something powerful was there, and there was enough energy that it held on, you know, to the images and what played out. And even though that you're right, they didn't die there, and they may not have committed any crime there, but they were hiding out for sure.
Yep.
And you know, they were perched in that upper room so that they could see which way law enforcement was moving. So they were either hiding after a crime, or they were planning a crime being in that hotel. And so maybe, just like, you know, with, you know, the ambush site, you know, just like around the vehicle at the museum, there's enough energy that it held on to that. And you're just seeing these images being replayed, because I haven't seen any evidence that they interact, you know.
Right.
I mean, other than maybe these spirit box, you know, these EVPs. But, you know, as far as somebody feeling like they were chased or scratched or touched or any of that stuff, you don't really see any of that. So maybe you are just seeing those residual images.
Memories. Yeah. Yep. I think you're probably right about that, because that might make more sense than a transitory spirit. I mean, we don't know one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not there. But it is interesting when you can have multiple locations with the same spirits mm-hmm. supposedly seen there. And Bonnie and Clyde are definitely those two people mm-hmm. that are seen at multiple locations. And sometimes, like the old bank, they throw stuff, little poltergeist activity. They're just seen. Sometimes they supposedly show up in a audio recording, mm-hmm. but they are definitely still to this day being talked about at these places.
Yeah, 100%. So what do you guys think? Have we got any listeners that have been out there on Highway 154 and seen the markers or visited the site? Maybe you've even been to the museum. Let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Just go on Facebook, search The Graveyard, and you will find thousands of us in there just sharing some really cool stories and experiences, telling jokes, among other things. And don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can listen to the show. You can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise, and you can become a patron. And thank you so much to everyone who has donated to the work that Adam and I do. We sincerely appreciate you. You are the reason that we are still at this all these years later. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.